Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, a couple of broad questions for us here. Should Tom Daschle become the head of HHS? I frankly would rather see Howard Dean in that position. And if Daschle's having all these problems with his taxes, and he is, and he's expressing remorse, and oh, please forgive me, and all this. You know, Howard Dean's a doctor. You know, why wasn't he originally chosen, for that matter? I mean, I think he would make a great Secretary of Health and Human Services. Anyhow, it's, Daschle, my problem with Tom Daschle's a nice guy. And you know, I know that he's been instrumental in a variety of good things, including helping fund some parts of Progressive Talk Radio and things like that. But bottom line, he's not a fan of single-payer health care. And if we're going to have a single-payer health care system in the United States, let's get somebody in who understands health care. That's Howard Dean. So, you know, I'm not starting an anti-Daschle campaign here. As I'm sure on the right they are doing, but I'm not all that upset that the guys on the right are doing this, because as much as I think Tom Daschle's a great guy, particularly legislatively, he's a very decent human being. He was a good Senate Majority Leader. In general, he's a reasonable progressive and a good Democrat. Still, he is not an open and overt and explicit fan of single payer health care systems, and Howard Dean is. To some extent, and he's a physician. I mean, I lived in Vermont when he got his Dr. Dinosaur program going, which covered basically every kid in Vermont. And he was very, very proud of it. I mean, it was a big deal. He was, you know, gung-ho for it. And so, anyhow, that's important. Just catching up on some of the news of the weekend. Michael Steele is now the chairman of the Republican Party. Somehow this smacks to me of tokenism. Now, I realize that just my saying that will probably cause some right-wing websites to go, oh, look at this, Hartman's being a racist. It's that, the soft bigotry of low expectations, blah de blah de blah. But here's why. Here's why I think that Michael Steele's selection to head the Republican Party has more to do, frankly, with his race than with his competence, because he is not all that competent and because he has played the race card. If you go back to the 2006 senatorial election, him against Ben Cardin. Ben Cardin was the Democrat. He was the Republican. Ben Cardin was the white guy. He was the black guy. Michael Steele, a guy who is now the head of the Republican Party. His campaign, apparently with his knowledge, he seemed quite supportive of this. His campaign went out and recruited several hundred, 300 poor African Americans, many of them homeless people, and put them in buses and gave them brochures, glossy brochures. Now, this is from the Washington Post back in 2006. And frankly, I've been watching the coverage of this all weekend, and I have been simply astounded. I do a live show on Chicago, Chicago's Progressive Talk, every Friday afternoon, and I brought it up on that show on Friday, and I said, I predict that you will not see mention of this in the corporate media. And a couple of people called in, including a couple of African Americans, and said, no, this will be covered. And no, it won't. Because the Republicans look out for their own, and two out of three guests on talk shows in America are Republicans. We have a corporate media, we have a Republican media, we have a conservative media in the United States. Limbaugh is not the conservative media. He is the Reich. He is the reactionary media. But in any case, these glossy, here's reading from the Washington Post. The six Trailways motor coaches, draped in Ehrlichan steel campaign banners, rumbled down Interstate 95 just before dawn on Election Day. On board, 300 mostly poor African Americans from Philadelphia ate donuts, sipped coffee, and prepared to spend the day at the Maryland polls. After an early greeting from Governor Robert L. Ehrlich's wife, Kendall, they would fan out in white vans across Prince George's County and inner city Baltimore, armed with thousands of flyers that appear to be designed to trick black Democrats into voting for the two Republican candidates. The glossy flyers bore photos of black Democratic leaders on the front. Under the headline, Democratic Sample Ballot. Yes, that was the headline on this flyer, were boxes checked in red for Ehrlich and Senate candidate Michael S. Steele, who were not identified as Republicans. Their names were followed by a long list of local Democratic candidates. Nearly a week later, now this is a week after the election, they discovered the fraud, and if not criminal, certainly immoral. Certainly political dirty tricks raised to the level of an art form. I mean, this is Watergate kind of stuff. Michael Steele is as slimy as Richard Nixon and his plumbers. Nearly a week later, writes the Washington Post, a fuller picture has emerged about how the plan to capture black votes unfolded. Details that suggest the flyers and the people paid to distribute them were not part of a hurry-up effort, but a calculated strategy. Republican leaders have defended the Election Day episode as an accepted element of bare-knuckle politics. Right. You got a black Republican running for the U.S. Senate, so you go into African-American neighborhoods, and you pass out a flyer with his picture along with a whole bunch of Democrats. And at the top, you put a headline that says, Democratic Sample Ballot. This is what Michael Steele did. This, by the way, wasn't the first time that Ehrlich and Steele had recruited poll workers in this way, quoting again from the Washington Post. In 2002, when Ehrlich was campaigning to become Maryland's first Republican governor in a generation and Steele was his choice for lieutenant governor, they bussed in homeless people from the district, from Washington, D.C., to hand out literature at Prince George's largely African-American precincts. It was not the first time Ehrlich and Steele had used flyers that some considered deceptive. U.S. Congressman Elijah Cummings, the Democrat, still recalls arriving at a polling place in his Baltimore district during the 2002 governor's race and being handed a glossy flyer. They handed me this big, beautiful piece of literature, he said. This is the Democrat member of Congress, the Democratic member of Congress, Elijah Cummings. They handed me this big, beautiful piece of literature is better than any of the literature I have produced, Cummings recalled. I said, boy, this is a wonderful photo. There's my pastor. There's Mel Martinez. He was then the Housing and Urban Development Secretary, the Democrat in the Clinton administration. And former Baltimore delegate Tony Fulton and myself. Then I saw Ehrlich in the picture, and I said the words, and I saw the words, and I said, uh-oh. The words read, Democrats for Ehrlich. Ehrlich was Steele's running mate. Cummings was livid. He had been one of the most vocal supporters of Ehrlich's opponent, Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, the Democrat. He immediately went on talk radio to denounce it, but the incident was largely ignored. Washed away by the bigger news of that day, Ehrlich had won the election. This is how Steele became lieutenant governor. On the eve of this month's election, we're back to 2006 now, the article here in the Washington Post. On the eve of this month's election, the flyers began landing in Prince George's mailboxes. Again, largely African-American. One was a glossy red, black, and green flyer, the colors that represent African black power, sporting pictures of County Executive Jack B. Johnson, his predecessor Wayne K. Curry, and past NAACP president and former U.S. Senate candidate Kwesi Mufume. Above the pictures of the three Democrats, the flyer read, Ehrlich, Steele, Democrats, and underneath it announced, these are our choices. None of the three candidates had endorsed Ehrlich or Steele. and only Curry had declared his support for Steele. There were others, too. A similar Democratic guide, in quotes, with Ehrlich and Steele's photo on the front, appeared in Baltimore. Another distributed in Baltimore County identified the Republican candidate for county executive as a Democrat. Michael Steele is a guy who got everything pretty much that he got electorally, and even lost the ones that he lost by using race and using it deceptively. And this is the guy that the Republicans have put in charge of their party. A party, by the way, that we now have the numbers on what they're responsible for. The shocking human toll in Iraq, the result of the Republican Party. 1 million dead, 4.5 million displaced, 1 to 2 million widows, 5 million orphans. And I still have Republicans who have the chutzpah to call this program and tell me that George W. Bush is not a mass murderer. Incredible. The Republican Party going down in flames. And maybe Tom Daschle will get a job. Maybe he won't. We'll see. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Saving the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide. Weekdays 9 to noon. AM 620 KPOJ. Portland's only progressive talk station.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
You know, the ones, fives, tens, twenties, fifties, and hundreds, that money is backed by what is called the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I don't know about you, but I have no faith in this government. And as far as its credit rating, if the U.S. government were rated by one of these rating companies,
what would it be? Zero worth?
It's Mike Malloy.
I mean, how do you rate a nation that's $12 trillion in debt?
Evenings 8 to 11. AM 620 KPOJ. 620KPOJ.com.
Hey, Carl Wolfson from The Morning Show. Who says there's no such thing as a free lunch? This month at Floor Trends Northwest in Selwood, when you schedule your complimentary flooring estimate, you also get a gift certificate good for lunch at either Hawthorne Fish House Southeast or Corbett Fish House Southwest. Now's the time to start planning for your spring home improvement projects. Schedule your complimentary flooring estimate, tile, hardwood, or carpet, by calling 503-236-8775 or visit floortrendsnw.com.
Raymond McKinney was walking to his car after perusing the local gardening center when he saw it.
Yeah, it had huge eyes and it wouldn't stop staring at me.
A stack of money was staring at him.
Yeah, it had these big googly eyes on it and it wouldn't stop looking at me.
Practically looking through him.
I guess. I mean, anyway, I thought my shoes were untied or...
Wasn't it.
Nope. And then I thought maybe it was my new haircut. You know, it's just kind of this new style. It's like a bulk.
And that wasn't it either, was it, Raymond?
Well, no. It turns out that little stack of money with the unwavering eyes was really the money
you could be saving with Geico.
Yeah.
So he called and saved tons of money.
Actually, yeah. I mean, I went online and I got a quote and I ended up saving several hundred dollars, which is weird because
Thank you, Raymond. We're done.
Yeah, I'm so done with you.
Geico. To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com. Then buy online, over the phone, or at your local office.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture.
That's because NBC Tonight goes 3D on an all-new Chuck. All the thrills of Chuck, but in 3D. Then, heroes being captured. And to survive, they must work together.
You want
to
live? Get in.
An all-new Heroes followed by the return of Patricia Arquette in Medium.
Excellent.
Chuck 3D, Heroes and Medium, NBC Tonight.
Worried about losing your home? Is your bank threatening to foreclose? Well, there's hope. Operation Hope, America's leading financial literacy and empowerment nonprofit. If you're facing mortgage payment challenges, we just may be able to help. Get free, reliable information and guidance by calling the Operation Hope Mortgage Hotline at 888-388-HOPE. That's 888-388-4673. Look, don't lose your home just because you didn't pick up the phone. Make that call today or visit us at operationhope.org.
Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman program, brought to you in part by the Teamsters, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act, Teamster.org for more information. Yes, this from the wire services, as they say. Olympic champion Michael Phelps weighed in today on last night's Super Bowl, congratulating the Arizona Cardinals on their awesome victory. Olympic champion Michael Phelps. Oh, the Cardinals really tore it up last night, said Mr. Phelps, who said he saw almost the entire game until he got, quote, a wicked attack of the munchies late in the fourth quarter. Maybe it was the Doritos commercial. I don't know. But suddenly I got unbelievably hungry, said Mr. Phelps, giggling uncontrollably. It was like, man, I have to get me some Doritos. Stat. Mr. Phelps said that once he got to his kitchen, he became distracted when he noticed that his hand appeared to be growing. I must have been staring at my hand for an hour, he said. It was kind of fascinating. The Olympian said that by the time he returned from the kitchen, the game was already over. So I didn't get to see the awesome moment when the Cardinals actually won, but I'm sure it was bodacious. Mr. Phelps said he celebrated the Cardinals' victory by eating four bags of Doritos and swimming a victory lap on his living room rug. Yes. Michael Phelps. Tip of the hat to Andy Borowitz, some of the best satire out there. BorowitzReport.com. So, Tom Daschle, I think it should be Howard Dean. Michael Steele, the Republicans get what they deserve. Iraq's shocking death toll, 1 million dead, 4.5 million displaced, 1 to 2 million widows, 5 million orphans. Meanwhile, the economic stimulus package moving along. The Financial Times today, in their lead editorial, the arguably one of the most conservative business newspapers in the world and certainly the most widely read, quote, this is from their top editorial, their lead editorial, the paper itself speaking up in the upper left-hand corner of the Financial Times editorial page, delay in passing the bill beyond the middle of next month would be a grave setback. It is incumbent on Senate Republicans especially to avoid this, that being delay. But they seem hell-bent for leather to have as much delay as they can. I don't know. Maybe Tom DeLay is still echoing around there. Dave in East Windsor, Connecticut. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind today?
I wanted to make a couple of comments on the Daschle nomination, and I'd like to get your comments on it, too.
Sure.
I'm concerned about the nomination, not as much from the tax issue, as if I remember correctly, there was an issue with an airplane accident back in his home state where he seemed to step in and stifle an investigation of the accident, which I felt at the time was a rather inappropriate thing to do. And I agree with you 100% on Howard Dean being a better candidate, but I think the issue that we're going to run into there is, and my biggest concern so far with Obama is it looks like the DLC, the Democratic Leadership Council, has taken over again. And I think they had some issues with Howard Dean in the beginning. And
they have a lot of issues with Howard Dean.
Yeah, and certainly are not a progressive group. I mean, I'd love to see Howard Dean in there, but I'm concerned that Obama seems to be falling back into relying on a lot of these people from the DLC, which I wish he wouldn't.
Yeah, there are quite a few. Dave, thanks for your comment. Time will tell. As I've said before, I mean, he's been president for about 2 weeks. I'm going to give the guy a chance. I'll wait. I'm going to suspend judgment. That said, you know, I'll also offer my opinions on who should be placed where and what policy should be. the stimulus package, for example. I think that instead of having tax cuts in there, I think that we should be rolling back the Reagan tax cuts. And I realize that the Republicans would get hysterical about that, but I think it would provide a substantial stimulus to the economy. Because people who are pulling money out of their businesses right now to give themselves fat paychecks would have an incentive to keep the money in those businesses, for example. And with regard to Tom Daschle, my I don't know about the plane crash. He has been fairly close in his lobbying career and his business career since leaving the Senate, and certainly was close during his time in the Senate with the healthcare industry. And as I said, he's not a fan of single-payer healthcare. And those are the reasons why I'm not enthusiastic about him. That said, if he becomes, you know, Secretary of HHS, then he has to answer to Barack Obama. Now, if Barack Obama says, do this, then it gets done. So that's the area where, you know, I'm willing to give Obama some space. I really think that we need to give him a whole bunch of space here. Kenny in Ohio. Hey, Kenny, got a minute before the break at the bottom of the hour. What's up?
Yeah, Tom, I was wondering, why doesn't industry or business be the one that's screaming the loudest for universal health care when they would, you know, it'd be great for that to get that monkey off of their back?
If you go over to the website theyrule.net, which lists all the interconnecting boards of directors in America, what you find is that many of the people who serve on the boards of some of the biggest corporations in America also serve on the boards of the largest healthcare companies in America. It is an old boy network. There are probably fewer than 400 or 500 people who are the major board members for thousands of the largest companies in America, certainly the Fortune 500. And you know, they're looking out for their own interests. So it would make perfect sense. That's number one. And number two, you know, and for things like the automakers, in some cases they've actually come out in favor of a national health care. But number two, for a large corporation, the primary advantage that they have, the way that they keep small entrepreneurial businesses out of the marketplace, the way that they suppress competition, is by being able to buy health care cheaper because they've got a larger pool than a small business. And they would like to keep it that way. Keep out the entrepreneurs. Not good for America, good for big companies.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Annoy Hannity. Listen to Hartman. Tom Hartman, nationwide. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
They say we're young and we don't know, won't find out till we grow. Well, I don't know while that's true, cause you got me, baby, I got you. Hey. I got you, babe.
Yeah, in fact, if those of you who've seen the movie recall this music from Groundhog Day, which it is today, and I got to tell you, beware of small furry animals. Yep, Alexander Kirillov, 44, thought he had it all figured out. He and a group of friends, coming home after a night of drinking, came upon a raccoon along the side of the street. Kirillov said, and I quote, "When I saw the raccoon, I thought I'd have some fun." This is what he told stunned casualty surgeons at the hospital. The fun he had in mind was raping the raccoon. The raccoon instead bit off his manhood. And the surgeon says, "We've been told we can get things working again, but we can't sew back on what the raccoon bit off. Why? Well, the raccoon chewed it up and swallowed it." Be careful. This is worse than Lorena Bobbitt. Anyhow, welcome back. 35 minutes past the hour. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Charlie in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on WTKG. Hey, Charlie, what's on your mind today?
Tom, good morning.
Hey, what's up?
Thanks for the opportunity, and thank you for your show. You're I've welcome. Only been listening about 9 months, and I understand you were here sometime back. Are you coming back to visit us again anytime soon?
Yeah, I get to Michigan at least once a year, and typically two or three times a year. So I will be back, and we'll try to do a gig there in Grand Rapids and, you know, hook it up with a bookstore and look forward
Excellent.
To meeting you.
Look forward to that. Well, on Dashiell, after reading Katrina VanderHeuvel's piece in Common Dreams this morning and Glenn Greenwald's from yesterday, I'm kind of siding with them. I know you said he's a good Democrat, but I think we're trying to raise the bar and the standards here. And 26 years at the public trough and enriching himself over the last two, and the tax thing all just add up to it's time to do something different.
In other words, you think that Dashiell should withdraw his nomination?
I do.
Or his, yeah. Or Obama should withdraw the appointment and move on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I am, based on things like the information in Katrina VanderHeuvel's piece, you know, I didn't want to go after him specifically for that. I think, you know, broadly they raise questions about, you know, why this guy for this job, why now? But Tom Dashiell has been a good public servant. But, you know, there are other people, and as like I said, Howard Dean at the top of the list, who would be perfect for this. And Charlie, point well made. Thank you very much. And I look forward to seeing you the next time I can make it to Michigan. Arnold in Macon, Georgia, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Arnold, what's up?
Hey, Tom Hartman, my man. Listen here, man. I'm looking at the front page of USA Today. I see a picture of Michael Steele, and then right below his picture is Michael Phelps, you know. Mm. And I wonder which one's using the bong, you know. This guy, Michael Steele, man. Republicans, here they go again, man, trying to put some blackness on their ways of doing business. This guy, Michael Steele, he came out of Maryland. Which got a very unique Democratic so far as elections, you know. Mm-hmm. If you got a large black Democratic electorate in that state, where Baltimore City, Baltimore County, and Prince George County, this guy couldn't win the Senate seat there. He lost it to Soul Brother Number One, Ben Cardin, mm-hmm. and he couldn't do it because he represented, you know. And the myth they try to raise that blacks came up 100% for Barack Obama because he's black. You know, no, black people vote for their self-determination with their self-worth. You know,
that is so easily disproven, Arnold, as a myth, because the vast majority of African Americans in the United States, when Hillary Clinton was in the race early on, were voting for her rather than Barack Obama. They,
exactly.
You know, like Democrats all across the country, African Americans are no different than anybody else. They want the candidate who's going to beat the Republican. And when it became
right.
after the Iowa caucuses, when it became obvious that race largely probably would not be a factor in this thing, that Barack Obama could win, actually even setting aside the issue of race, when after the Iowa caucuses, when it became obvious that Barack Obama was one hell of a campaigner, one hell of a Democrat, then
right.
African-Americans, like white Americans, you know, and Latino Americans, I mean, right across the board, pretty much Democrats all across America said, hey, we need to take this guy seriously. So.
Well, these guys like Michael Steele and that guy, guy from Ohio, there's a Secretary of State over there.
Yeah, Ken Blackwell.
What was his name?
Ken Blackwell.
Man. I mean, they need to get a new set of people to yeah. if they want to put some blacks in position over there. They need to get some people who make sense. These guys make no sense at all.
Yeah, and so you don't think that I'm being a racist when I say that the Republican Party is practicing tokenism by putting Michael Steele in there?
No, sir. They got the wrong guy at the 10th lap of the big tent. They trying to determine. He's the wrong guy to be there. I'm telling
yeah.
you.
Okay.
He doesn't
Arnold.
Represent my thinking at all.
Yep. Arnold, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to us.
Okay,
I appreciate
Tom.
It. Good to hear from you. Bill in Portland, Oregon, listening on KPOJ.
Yeah,
hey, Bill.
Thanks for taking my call. What I really want to talk on is I just see that Obama needs to really take control like he did in his campaign. He needs to take control of his party, and he needs to rally them together in a unified, cohesive group and kick back, fight back on these Republicans. I mean,
yeah.
we defeated them in the election. We need to take a bold plan that's going to work. It's kind of like, as a metaphor, antibiotics. You take the whole course. You do the whole thing. A half-baked a compromised stimulus bill isn't going to work, which plays right into the hands of Republicans.
Yeah.
Grover Norquist, shrink government down so you can drown it in tub. They want to win power back. They want this program to be defeated, and they want to hang it on Barack Obama and the Democratic Party. That's the Republican side. But on the Democratic side, Barack can't buy into this idea of the war in the Middle East. He's taking too long to get the troops out of Iraq. And this whole idea of getting into Afghanistan, it's going to sink his plan to get our economy back on its feet, just like Vietnam sank the war on poverty. I'd like to have your take on that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that there are a number of minefields here, and Obama is navigating them very carefully. And so far, I think overly cautiously. I think that the bailout program is too small. A, the tax cuts, the middle class tax cuts he campaigned on, so he has to have them in there. I understand that and I respect that, even though I don't think that they're going to do much good. I think that we need to roll back the Reagan tax cuts and dramatically raise the top marginal tax rate on people making more than $3.2 million a year. What we saw was during the last 8 years, people who make more than $300 million a year saw their incomes double. Double. The richest Americans doubled their income. That is not just their wealth. Their wealth went up dramatically, too, but their income doubled over the last 8 years because most of them are making their money from capital gains, which are now taxed at a maximum of 15%. And the rest of us pay taxes that can go up into the 30s. It should go up into the 70s, and and capital gains should track it, frankly, so that people who are making a pile of money are paying a pile of taxes. I mean, you know, they're using the system, the commons that we have in place, our financial systems, our laws, our banking systems. They're using all those things. If they're using them to enrich themselves, let them pay proportionately their share of it. Very, very straightforward process, Bill. And with regard to taking on the Republicans, the one caveat that I'd put on your comment is that, you know, you say he should go full bore and fight, you know, and go to war with them. I think that what he's doing, I think he's doing a little Sun Tzu here, Art of War, is you don't engage the battle until the battle's actually a battle. And so far, it's the two armies positioning themselves. The battle will come when the Republicans try to obstruct this thing in the Senate, or if they try to filibuster it. And that's when he needs to come in like a ton of bricks. And that's when, frankly, all of us are going to see what kind of President Barack Obama is going to be. So far, you know, he hasn't had that opportunity. We haven't had the opportunity to see that other than his appointments. And again, as I said, with his appointments, we may be disappointed with some of his appointments. Some of them very good. Hilda Solis is amazing. But there's a hold on her. The Senate, you know, Harry Reid needs to bust that hold immediately and get 60 votes to bust that and get her in there. But the bottom line is that if he is going to be the kind of leader that we hoped he would be when we elected him, then even mediocre Democrats will have to get into line. They certainly did behind FDR, and mediocre Republicans got in line behind Teddy Roosevelt. So time will tell. Time will tell. But Bill, I appreciate your comment and your thoughts. Stella in Ithaca, New York. Hey, Stella, got a minute before the break. What's up?
Hi, sir. Thank you for taking my call. I would like to talk about the orphans that you mentioned a little while ago in your program. There are 5 million orphans in Iraq, and
right.
My question is, do you think if there's any way for us to, or anybody in out of that country for that matter, to set up an adoption program whereby we can go in and adopt these children?
That's a good idea. There's a strong demand for adopted children in the United States, although there's also, I can tell you, there are a lot of kids in the United States looking for adoptive families. They tend to be African-American kids, or they tend to be kids with special needs. And so, you know, I'm kind of two minds about it because, you know, everybody wants the kids who are lighter skinned and or white kids and like that. But yeah, putting together a national or an international adoption program over the short term, because it is so destructive to kids to be in orphanages where they don't get touched, they don't get human contact, they don't get the kind of there's a bonding process that occurs with children in the early years that is absolutely necessary for them to grow up to be healthy and functional adults. And we need to be funding those orphanages to make them work right.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Truth is his weapon. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
The hardest part of any home improvement project is finding a good quality contractor, somebody who's going to do the job right, complete it on time and within budget, and not going to hassle you. So who do you call? Who do you trust when you need a plumber, a painter, an electrician? I'll tell you who to call. Like me, call Angie's List. Before we signed up for Angie's List, we had a disaster contractor install a kitchen counter. We used Angie's List to find a handyman to show up and fix everything. They really came through for us. More than 650,000 homeowners nationwide use Angie's List for ratings and reviews on more than 300 service categories, even doctors. It's a word-of-mouth network for consumers. Angie's List is a growing collection of homeowners' real-life experiences with local service companies. Now the people who join Angie's List, they're like you. They're looking for a way to find trustworthy companies that perform high-quality work. To join Angie's List, go to AngiesList.com and eliminate the fear of hiring the wrong company. I joined Angie's List, and you should, too, today at AngiesList.com. 1-888-888-LIST. 888-888-LIST.
Carl Wolfson and friends.
Let's get to Joe the plumber. He's covering the war in Israel.
6 to 9.
You're not going to believe what he said.
I'll be honest with you. I don't think journalists should be anywhere allowed war. And if you're going to sit there and say, well, look at this atrocity, well, you don't know the full story behind it half the time.
Yeah, you know, we should just take what the Pentagon says. No atrocities. You know, that's just war.
It's Carl Wolfson.
I think he's one of those people that had his 5 minutes of fame and now thinks he's really smart.
I kind of lean that he's an idiot.
Morning 6 to 9.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Portland's only progressive talk station.
Hi, it's Ryan Tedder from One Republic. This fall, we are headlining Tag This Tour 2008. Check out our website, onerepublic.net, for details on how you can bid on exclusive packages to our upcoming tour. The best part is, you'll be helping to save lives. All of the proceeds from these auctions will benefit the City of Hope. City of Hope aims to serve cancer patients with the latest research, treatment, compassion, and dignity. Join us in the mission to find a cure for cancer. Visit www.onerepublic.net for tour dates and information.
What if I said you could erase your wrinkles, tighten your skin, and make frown lines disappear from view, all without surgery or injections? With all the creams you've tried, you're probably skeptical. So I'm going to prove it to you by sending you a free trial of a scientific breakthrough called Hydroxytone. Shed years from your appearance faster than you ever thought possible.
I looked at her, and I was just, wow, she looked so young.
I told her I couldn't believe how smooth her face looks. She's lost, what, 10 years at least?
Request your risk-free trial of this proven breakthrough today. The results are so impressive, Hydroxytone was given away in VIP gift bags at international film festivals.
She always looked good to me, but now I can't believe how young she looks.
Call now for your free trial of Hydroxytone. For a limited time, try it before you buy it. 1-800-900-4211. But hurry, when this offer's gone, it's gone. Call 1-800-900-4211. 1-800-900-4211.
Is your computer running slowly? Does it take more than 3 seconds for your email to load? Are you getting pop-ups? How about spam? Well, if you're experiencing any of these symptoms, your computer and your privacy are at risk. Because these are the telltale signs of a virus. It'll only get worse until you act. Get a free diagnosis at mycleanpc.com and optimize your PC.
I got the free diagnosis, and now my computer is lightning fast.
My computer never crashes anymore.
Talk about optimization. My computer isn't even this fast at work.
MyCleanPC.com will remove spyware, viruses, and virus-infected emails, all while optimizing your PC performance. It's all-in-one protection, and it's been raved about by USA Today and Computer World. The diagnosis is free. Just log on to MyCleanPC.com. Even if you have antivirus software, your computer could still be infected. Find out instantly with a free comprehensive diagnosis at MyCleanPC.com. If your computer is running slowly or you're still getting pop-ups, you need to get your free diagnosis from MyCleanPC.com. That's MyCleanPC.com.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Oh, don't be scared about the future. You know, as Franklin Roosevelt said...
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance.
And he was, of course, speaking of the first Republican Great Depression. So, by the way, earlier on when I was talking about Tom Daschle has taken a whole pile of money from the insurance industry and whatnot. And I said, you know, I'm not totally opposed to Tom Daschle's nomination because I think that all of these guys work for Barack Obama and he's going to be the one who's going to call the shots. And I made the comment in passing that Tom Daschle had been involved early in the early days of helping to fund Progressive Talk Radio. I want to make it very clear. Somebody raised this in the chat room. I want to make it very clear that this program, the Tom Hartman program, has never taken any money from any politicians. We have never done any fundraising at all. Our program is owned by Louise and me, and we are the only ones who have funded it, period. So just, you know, for the record, lest somebody think that I'm somehow involved with Tom Daschle, I'm not. Never have been. Period. End of discussion. So, but I still think, and I still think Howard Dean would make a better guy. He would make a much better guy. 866-303. Oh, and one other thing. For those of you who have iPhones or the iPod Touch, there's a new kind of iPod that hooks into the internet where you can download applications. There's a new application called Talk Radio. And you can find the Talk Radio application on iTunes using the keywords Talk Radio, or you can go to juicydevelopment.com. It's kind of cool, and my show is on there along with a whole bunch of others, progressive, conservative, right across the board, and it allows you to find stations near you that are playing our shows if you're traveling around the country, or if you want to listen to the show, it hooks you up with various stations at different times of the day. Some of our shows are played in time delay. And so pretty much any time of the day, if you're looking for the show, you can just click that. So just plug Talk Radio into iTunes or into your iPhone on the search. So just a heads up. And I have no affiliation with them either, other than that, hey, isn't it cool that I'm on the list? So I wanted you to know about it. Scott in Wisconsin. Hey, Scott, listening on Sirius. What's on your mind today?
Hey, what I find interesting with the economic stimulus plan is the fact that the Republicans' big beef is that there's some items in there that don't help us immediately, which I can understand. But while watching CNN about Barack Obama's first 100 days in office, they will fail to mention things like the fact that he's overturned a lot of Bush policies. Example, the president keeping his record sealed from the public.
Yeah.
All these kinds of things. Yet when they go to John McCain on a TV ad or TV talking about the stimulus plan, he'll say on one network, we need to cut out the big items that don't help us immediately. And on the other network, he's saying, well, we need to cut out certain things and we need to leave certain policies that were in place.
Yeah.
So even though Barack Obama's trying to clean things up, McCain's up there saying, not only will we vote for your package, but we want you to flip back the time that Mr. Bush wrote all these wonderful policies in before he got out.
Yeah, if we're going to flip back time, we need to flip back to before the Reagan tax cuts. We need to roll back the Reagan tax cuts. But you're right, Scott, and there's ideology at work here, and it's frankly rather bizarre. I watched Kay Bailey Hutchinson on Meet the Press this weekend trying to and saying – and I think that also in the commentary afterwards, they had that woman from CNBC going off. And maybe it wasn't her. Maybe it wasn't Erin Brooke is her name, or Brock. But whoever it was, one of the folks on that panel said,
you know, it's been proven. History of the Western world. Tax cuts are the most effective way to stimulate the economy.
Well, I'm sorry. You know, everybody's talking about how this is the worst crash since 82. 82 was a year after Reagan came into office, and it was about a half a year after he put in his tax cuts for the rich. Tax cuts don't stimulate the economy. Tax cuts crash the economy. Tax cuts create bubbles. They stimulate the stock market, but not the economy, and particularly tax cuts on the rich. And it just astounds me. And I was watching Kay Bailey Hutchins, and she kept coming back to, well, we need to have tax cuts for the rich and less of this social spending. We shouldn't be spending money on hospitals and hospitalization for people and education and things like that. I'm sorry, not only does that create jobs immediately, but that's investing in the capital of this country. That is the infrastructure of this country. It's important stuff. So it's very important stuff, in fact. Joel in Oakland, California, listening on Green 960. Hey, Joel.
Hey, Tom. An excellent show as per usual. I have a brief cultural comment, and I'd like to follow that up with a question about the economy to you, if I may. I noticed that the new Pope Benedict was probably going to be a pretty interesting pope to watch what he did when the first thing that made me realize that was Bob Dylan had an audience with the Pope, and then a while after that, the Pope came out with a announcement that he was going to stop allowing guitar music in the masses.
Mm.
When this Bishop Williamson issue came up, I was appalled. As I think
for our listeners who don't know what you're talking about, Bishop Williamson is Richard Williamson is a British cardinal who had been excommunicated because he denied the Holocaust. And Pope Benedict has brought him back in. And, in fact, the chief rabbinate of rabbinate, I'm probably mispronouncing that, of Israel, has cut ties with the Vatican over this. And this is an issue, Joel. It raises some questions about the direction that the Vatican is going. And not so much a religious one. Keep in mind, the Vatican is a country. They have a seat at the United Nations. In fact, they're on the Committee on Birth Control, and they're the only country in the world with no women.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club. Providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Kerry Lucas on the line with us, the Vice President of Policy and Economics at the Independent Women's Forum, IWF.org. And Kerry, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
It's always nice talking with you. You wrote a piece, which people can find over at IWF.org, titled Hawaii's Universal Health Insurance Lesson. And Sean, our producer, actually lived in Hawaii, used their health insurance program. Lived in Canada, lived in the UK, used all of them, likes them all. What's the problem with Hawaii?
Well, it's been disbanded. Basically, what happened was early last year they passed the first universal health insurance program for children that was free. Basically, people could opt into this program. There was no income limit, and then it was just a $7 copay for each visit you had. And everyone was very excited about this, and now 7 months after it was launched, it has had to be closed because what they found was when they were really targeting, of course, was the uninsured population. There are several thousand children in Hawaii who don't have insurance, and the unfortunate reality was that it wasn't those children this was being helped, that 85% of those who moved in to be enrolled in this new program were those who previously had insurance with Hawaii's, basically a non-profit and health insurance provider, but that still charged a monthly premium. So costs went through the roof, and Hawaii officials were really frustrated and said, boy, this wasn't the point of the program, and had to close it down.
So let me get this straight. The people of Hawaii, 85%, an overwhelming majority of the people of Hawaii said that they would rather get their health insurance.
No. 85% of the people who newly enrolled in this program.
No, I understand. Right. 85% of these folks said that instead of paying private for-profit health insurance companies, they would rather pay the state of Hawaii, or they'd rather get their insurance from the state of Hawaii. That seems like a mandate that they'd rather have, like you have in Austria right now. And that the reason that the thing got pulled, I would guess, is because it was in the process of putting the health insurance companies out of business in Hawaii, and they probably brought tremendous political pressure to bear on and financial pressure to bear on the Hawaiian legislature.
Well, I think once government starts offering free stuff, which is essentially what this is, a lot of people start saying, hey, why should I have to pay for this?
Well,
I don't know
it's paid for with tax dollars.
But it depends. You're shifting onto somebody else. If you don't pay, I don't know what Hawaii's income tax is like, but when you start thinking about this on a national level, if this were to happen, it's interesting because one of the things that I think that is really important for people to understand, and I understand the case for universal health insurance, and there are a lot of people for whom that sounds really attractive, but when somebody like President Obama, while campaigning, says, hey, if you like your health insurance, nothing's going to change. You don't have to worry about it. Well, that's something that people should be really skeptical of, because what we know is that when these programs get offered, when all of a sudden there becomes a free option, it's not just folks who don't have insurance right now who are affected. You're going to have a massive migration, just like with SCHIP. What we know is that as SCHIP expands, more than half of the kids who are enrolling, it's not that their parents weren't able to afford insurance before, it's that they prefer not to pay for it, and so drop their insurance and take on to this, pass the bill onto the taxpayer. And some, in some cases, means that kids are actually going to get lower quality care as a result. So, and ultimately, once this dynamic takes effect, private insurance is going to be dried up. So if you are sitting there thinking, well, this whole thing doesn't affect me, they can create a national health care program, and I can sit here and still enjoy my superior health care insurance because I'm going to keep playing for private. Well, eventually private is just not going to exist anymore if we keep moving towards government providing this for free.
You know, the little bomb in your comment there, Carrie, was getting lower quality health care services. The fact of the matter is that health insurance companies don't provide health care insurances. They simply pay for them. So
they provide access.
Right. They pay for
it. Yes, they provide access. So it depends on how generous your government benefits and your government program is.
Right. But I suspect that we're looking at the same thing here, which is the fact that Medicare or Medicaid and the state health insurance programs really are just variations on Medicare, that Medicare or Medicaid, when allowed to compete broadly with for-profit health insurance companies that skim anywhere from 15% to 35% of the healthcare dollars off the top to give that money and dividends to stockholders, to multimillion-dollar salaries in the case of United Healthcare, billion-dollar salaries to CEOs, and to pay for corporate jets and gold-plated faucets in the corporate headquarters bathroom and fancy china in the dining room of the corporate headquarters and stuff like that, then people say, you know, I'd rather have the government, with their 3% overhead. And
well,
I see that as a good thing, and you see that as a bad thing.
Well, we also know that a lot of times what happens when you start having government get involved is that government starts saying, boy, costs are going through the roof, so we are going to have to start limiting care. That's why in places like England, there are often restrictions on who can have access to certain types of care.
You think there aren't restrictions in the United States?
Pardon me?
You think there aren't restrictions in the United States?
There are some. If you're willing to pay for it, if you can find a way to pay for it or find a nonprofit to pay for it, that's the way.
If you're willing to pay for it in the United Kingdom, you can get anything you want.
There are
private doctors there, you know, anywhere in the world. I mean, you can hop on a plane and go to Thailand and get plastic surgery for less than you can in the United States. I mean, there's, you know, if you can afford to pay for it, the sky's the limit. If that's the caveat, I'd say that your argument is getting really weak.
In Canada, it's basically illegal to pay private health. That's been
repealed for some time.
It's no longer enforced, but I understand there still are restrictions, but there is such a demand
We have a good friend, Louis Melmadrona, who stayed at our house, in fact, a few weeks ago, was a guest on the show for an hour. Four times a year, Louis comes down and spends a few days with us. He is a professor of medicine at the University in Calgary, and he's a doctor. And an American citizen, by the way, has been an American doctor for years and years. And ain't the case.
The idea of the private of Canada being able to have people pay extra to have private care.
I beg your pardon?
Do you support that if it is legal in Canada? Is that fair?
I think people should be able to buy anything they want. I'm not in favor of the government saying you can't buy something. What I am in favor of is the government saying here's a minimum level of care. When Jefferson talked about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, in the Declaration of Independence, when the preamble to the Constitution talks about the general welfare, I believe that you can't have life if you don't have health care. When Franklin Roosevelt laid out his four freedoms, one of them was the freedom from fear, including the fear of illness. And Harry Truman followed up on that with proposing a national single-payer health care system in 1947, which was shot down by the Republicans in the House and the Senate. But that was the first time it was actually seriously proposed as a piece of legislation. And although back in the late 1700s, it was fairly widespread for poor people, and paid for by the government. But I think that having a basic minimum of care so that nobody has to worry about their cancer being missed because they can't afford a physical, or their prenatal care being lousy and so they end up with a child with birth defects. Some basic minimum standard of care that's provided by all of us that has nothing to do with anybody making a buck is a healthy thing for society.
But I think that, you know, right now we do have a system where if you show up in a hospital and you are unable to pay, the hospital is going to provide the care. And there's a lot of free clinics out there where you can get preventative care.
But if you have any kind of job at all, they will hound you until the day you die to pay that bill.
Well, you know, but that's important. I mean, we do have to have a society that who's going to pay for all this health care? We already know that health care costs are going through the roof. There does have to be somebody at the end of the day is going to have to pay this. And what we've seen, we know from other countries, that the bills don't go down when you start making things available for free for people.
But to a large extent, they're going through the roof because you have for-profit companies running doctors and programs like that. And they also own testing services, for example. We're seeing testing going through the roof. Turns out it's not fear of lawsuits. It's that the company is the doctors themselves have an investment in the companies that do the tests, or the company for which they work has an investment in the companies that do the tests. And so all these tests are being ordered as a way of jacking up profits. Healthcare costs are going through the roof because we have a for-profit healthcare system that is always trying to look for ways to make more money. And one of the ways you make more money is charge people more money.
One of the things that it's actually really important for people to be better informed about healthcare options. And one of the real problems we have is that people are separated from the cost decisions that they make. Right now, when we have a health insurance, if you've got a great health insurance, you show up at the doctor, they tell you to run it, that you're going to run a test, and sure, but people just sign because what's it going to cost them? $50 out of pocket, and that does affect everyone.
Right.
So there are real problems, and there are ways we can control costs. We don't have to have government take everything over, though.
Yeah, well, I'm not opposed to that. So, Carrie, and you are. And people can read your article over at IWF.org, the Independent Women's Forum. Carrie Lucas, the VP of Policy and Economics. Carrie, always great talking with you. Thanks for dropping by.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Great talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Blindingly logical. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
I was driving my rig down the interstate. Had an on-time bonus, couldn't afford to be late. So to save on fuel, save time and cash, I fly by the scale house, move on past with pre-pass.
Pre-pass.
It's a bypass system, first of its kind. Checks my weight and my docks, driving 65. Then a green light flashes up on my dash. And while the other eight stop, I just move on past with pre-pass.
Pre-pass.
With your good driving record, Pre-Pass can save you time and money on every haul. Highway sensors check your weight and certifications as you drive highway speed. If everything checks, a green light on your dash says drive on by. Try Pre-Pass free. We guarantee you'll want it along on every haul. Visit prepass.com or call 888-559-PASS to try Pre-Pass free. That's prepass.com or 888-559-PASS. 888-559-PASS.
Ed Schultz.
So there's going to have to be some more discussion about this.
Which is healthy, which is positive.
Noon to 3.
And I think that we as lefties have got to make sure we know how to embrace all this stuff.
He calls them the way he sees them.
Just because Pelosi and Obama may disagree on the timing of the repealing of the Bush tax cuts doesn't mean that it's nuclear war.
The Ed Schultz Show.
There's going to be more than enough stuff to talk about.
Noon to 3. AM 620 KPOJ.
Online at 620KPOJ.com.
In the next minute, I'm going to challenge you to believe it or leave it. How? I'm going to show you how you can get a brand new top brand laptop free. Just log on to freelaptopchallenge.com. Of course, a lot of you won't believe me, and I guess unfortunately you'll forget this ad and miss out. But there are listeners who'll give it a try and log on to freelaptopchallenge.com, and yes, they will be able to get a brand new laptop free. See, thousands of people have received free laptops online, and now you can too. It all works because companies got smart. Instead of blowing their budgets on expensive TV ads, they now give away stuff online. So what are you going to do? Ignore this ad? Or log on to freelaptopchallenge.com and get yourself a top brand, top quality laptop for free. Even if you don't have access to a computer right now, this offer is available all day. So write this down. Freelaptopchallenge.com. I'm telling you, it really is that easy. Who wouldn't want a free laptop? Go on, I challenge you. Log on to freelaptopchallenge.com and check out all the details. Freelaptopchallenge.com.
Prices are up. The cost of running your business is up. Everything's up, except your marketing budget. So what's a small business to do? Email marketing to your current customers with ConstantContact.com. With Constant Contact, you get professional-looking email newsletters that keep your customers coming back. Plus, there's a free 60-day trial with plans as low as $15 a month. So even if the economy's down, your sales don't have to be. Put your marketing on the upswing with ConstantContact.com.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents a word from your tires, your brakes, your battery, your oil and filter, your fluid levels, and your belts and hoses.
Would you check us, please?
Okay, okay. I'm on my way to the Ford dealer now for the Works Fuel Saver Pack. You'll get checked or tested or changed or rotated or filled for just $29.95 or less after a $10 mail-in rebate.
Woohoo! I love this guy!
Taxes, diesel, and disposal fees extra. See your participating Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership for rebate details through 331-09.
Why get your dinner from the fast food window when you can make a real meal at home? With Stouffer's, you can make a delicious meal with real ingredients and no preservatives for as little as $2 a serving. Now that's a value menu.
Beaverton Lodge Retirement Residence offers independent senior living in the heart of Beaverton within walking distance of the Beaverton Library and the Stuart Senior Center. Visit and discover the affordable luxury of Beaverton Lodge with its spacious apartments, large decks, and in-room storage, all in a woodland setting. Visit their website at beavertonlodge.com.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Just a quick heads up, some of the events coming up in New York City tomorrow. My partner in crime, Lamar Waldron, he and I wrote two books, two of many. We wrote the two books about the JFK assassination, Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy. Legacy of Secrecy just came out. Ultimate Sacrifice was made into an hour-long special by NBC that airs about every month or so on the, I believe it's the History Channel. But anyhow, Lamar will be tomorrow in New York City giving a talk at 7 p.m. hosted by Mark Crispin Miller at McNally-Jackson Bookstore. That's at 52 Prince Street at 7 p.m. So you can check that out. February this month, today is February, what, the 1st, the 2nd? Today's the 2nd. February 26th and 27th, I will be in Washington, D.C., doing the radio row at the Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC, as we've done now for 5-6 years, long time. March 7th, the week after that, I'll be in Seattle for a one-day cruise with me and Talk 1090 and aboard the Royal Argosy, noon to 3 p.m., and you can get tickets and information about that. This three-hour cruise of Elliott Bay and the Puget Sound at am1090seattle.com. On March 19th, 2 weeks after that, I'll be in Chicago, Illinois on Thursday, March 19th, to debate Michael Medved. That's sponsored by Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. Their website, if you want tickets to that, that should be a very interesting event. ChicagoProgressiveTalk.com. And on May 1st and 2nd, well, actually on the 2nd, Saturday, I'll be in Denver, Colorado as one of the keynote speakers at the Green Festival. And their website is greenfestivals.org/Denver for the Denver information. So that's the stuff coming up. And Sidney drops me a note. He says, heard you say that the Vatican is the only state without women. Don't the nuns count? Actually, the Vatican is the only state I hit my own break and wasn't able to finish my own sentence. It's the only state where with no women who can vote. Now, I arguably that may also be the case for Saudi Arabia and a few other of the Arab states, but in the country of the Vatican, as represented in the United Nations, the women there, to the best of my knowledge, I'm willing to stand corrected on this, but this was the case when Pope John Paul II invited me and Louise and I to come over and meet with him for a private audience back in 1999, as I recall, maybe it was 98, and we went first to the Vatican, and they were very kind, gave us a guided tour and some of the really cool kind of inside stuff that tourists don't normally see. And then we went up to Casa Gandolfo, his summer palace, and spent a couple of hours with His Holiness. And I was very impressed by Pope John Paul II. I was very impressed by him. I read his last book, and it was a striking insight into him and into the struggles that he had with his faith. I had a lot of respect for him. Even though I wasn't raised Catholic, I was raised Protestant. But at that time, the Vatican had, I think, some 700 actual official citizens, and they were all men. But maybe things have changed. I don't know. Tom in St. Paul. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Well, first of all, a longtime listener. You're thoughtful and honest, and I like that in a person.
Well, thank you, Tom. No need to pat me on the back, though. You can just jump right into it.
I was calling about medical records in the stimulus package.
Mm-hmm.
That's a sticky wicket. There's lots of issues about privacy, about crony capitalism to the huge IT and medical bureaucracies that exist.
Right.
But I think they should set it up that individuals, that the money goes in the pocket of people, that you get paid an amount of money for submitting a medical record summary that, you know, like there's a face sheet that says where you were born and all this stuff, and then there's a page for every year that lists what illnesses you had, how much you weighed,
right,
what places you went for medical treatment.
Right.
But I can just see them, you know, scanning all kinds of illegible doctors' records and notes and everything and calling this
It could get pretty bizarre. On the one hand, there is, and you know, we had a caller on this last week, a potential for abuse and for tremendous violations of privacy. On the other hand, it could streamline the system and it could make things much more efficient. I kind of like the idea, although it's not, I can't think of a way to make it practical, and maybe somebody will, of each one of us having and owning our own medical records. In other words, we go to all of our various doctor's offices and whatnot, and they compile whatever they have, and they give it to us, and they delete it. And we now, other than just, you know, general stuff, and we now have that information. And anytime a physician wants to access our records, I can email it to them, or I could have it on my own private, behind a firewall website and give them access to it, or somehow do that. But I get to control them, because that's how it is right now. You can go into your doctor's office right now and say, I would like my records, please. And they, in most states, they have to give them to you. They're your property.
I have most of my medical records. I have all my kids' medical records, but I have to demand them from the doctors. I need a copy of that.
Right.
And so you end up with a folder. But there's a lot of stuff that is not critical information. We don't need to know what your temperature was that third day you were in the hospital.
Yeah.
So just keeping all the details with the providers or with yourself.
Yeah, there's got to be a solution here somewhere, Tom. It's starting to get very, very complex and very sticky. And my biggest concern, my two biggest concerns are, number one, privacy, number two, insurance companies using it against us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Yeehaw is not a foreign policy. Tom Hartman, Nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ. Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
I climbed across the mountain tops, swam all across the ocean blue. I crossed all the land and I rode the rules. And baby, I broke them off for you. Oh, but this evening when I was flat broke, you made me feel like a million bucks.
Four minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here. The True People's Radio.
Baby, take off your coat. Real slow.
Yeah, during the Super Bowl game.
Baby, take off your shoes.
Well, Larry Fitzgerald was scoring for the Cardinals. Scoring has a whole other meaning here,
baby,
I suppose.
Take off your dress. Yes, yes, yes. You can't leave your hat on.
This did not happen nationally, so odds are, unless you lived in Tucson, you didn't see it. But KVOA-TV in Tucson. How does this happen? During the Super Bowl, they... Right after this play, they flip to a clip, a video clip from a porn movie. It shows a woman unzipping a man's trousers, followed by the, I suppose, predictable act. And Cora King, one of the viewers, told the Arizona Daily Star, "I just figured it was another commercial. Until I looked up, then he did this little dance with everything hanging out." Yeah. The interruption happened just after the touchdown by the Arizona Cardinals, who lost the match to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So, our full Monty alert for the day. 866-303-2270, our telephone number, our live video stream over at airamerica.com, tomhartman.com for our live free chat room and message boards and all kinds of cool stuff. Amy on in San Diego. Hey, Amy, what's on your mind today? Amy, you're on the air. But I'm not hearing Amy. So let's try David in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, David, what's up?
Yeah, hey, Tom. This weekend I heard Barney Frank challenging Senator Jim DeMint on one of the Sunday shows. And, you know, it's the first time Jim DeMint was talking about, you know, all the sound cuts for tax cuts, how they're great, how we need to lower corporate rates and lower personal income taxes and everything else. And Barney Frank finally is the first Democrat I've heard state that part of the reason we're in this economic crisis is because of the war in Iraq. Because yeah. When it came to a spending bill for the Iraqi war, the Republicans had no problem. So when it comes time to funding the military, no problem, but when it's in death and destruction, but when it comes time to helping our own citizens in the United States, you know, it's irresponsible spending.
Yes, in fact, we should all say good on Barney Frank for calling out Jim DeMint and saying, you want a big spending bill, you want an enormous spending bill, look at your war in Iraq. So far, $1 trillion. There's going to be another $1 trillion in veterans benefits paid out of the live over the lifetime of these people coming back with all these injuries and whatnot. Not to mention lost productivity in the United States, probably another $1 trillion. And then on top of that, on top of those $3 trillion, and these are my numbers, not Barney Frank's, but I think that I can defend these numbers. There's going to be a $4 trillion. Because all of this stuff was put on a credit card. It was borrowed from the Chinese and from trust fund babies like George W. Bush, who want it to be paid back with interest over the next 20, 30, 40 years. And so those T-bills will be paid back with interest. So at the time comes when our children and our grandchildren are paying that tax bill, or we are, should we live long enough, it will be $4 trillion for this crazy, crazy war in Iraq. Tim in Garden City, Michigan, listening in WDTW. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. It's great to talk to you. I'm a big fan.
Thank you.
I'm calling with a comment to address something that Kerry, your guest Kerry, had said about the control that you have over your health care with for-profit versus not-for-profit health care. Mm-hmm. I'm currently dealing with a shoulder injury and being treated with physical therapy. And just this morning, I decided that I wanted to get a second opinion. So I called to schedule an appointment with a orthopedic surgeon, and they would not let me schedule the appointment directly with him. I had to go through a go-between specialist who would then have to refer me to the orthopedic surgeon.
Interesting. Which makes you wonder if the company owns the company, and so
right,
they just figured out a way to double bill, and then everybody wonders why the costs are going up. Because it's a for-profit system. So the number one priority is to figure out a way to jack up profits, even if it makes people like you and me and everybody else go through two and three hoops that we've got to jump through in order to get the bills paid, in order to get the service, rather.
Right. Yeah. And the opponents of a national healthcare system say that it's going to put more burden on the taxpayers. Well, the system we have now, all that did was just add an extra one or two layers to my expense, because even though I have the employer-provided healthcare system or healthcare program right now, mm-hmm. I still have out-of-pocket monthly expenses, and now I have an additional copay that I'm going to have to be expecting.
Well, and on top of that, frankly, Tim, you think your employer's paying the bill, but if your employer didn't have to pay the bill, they could pay you.
Exactly right.
I mean, you know.
Okay, Tom, well, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
Yeah,
keep up the good work.
Thank you, Tim. Thanks a lot for the call. Yeah, the bottom line, I mean, you know, you could argue it all comes out of our paychecks. Marilyn in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Marilyn.
Hi, Tom. There's an elephant in the room that I think isn't getting talked about. Like Obama talks about taking our soldiers from Iraq and moving to Afghanistan and putting more soldiers there. Part of the reason I think that the issue is that if they come home, they have no jobs.
Yeah, I know.
So what do we do? I mean, those of us who really want to bring our soldiers home and heal them and help them, what do we do? Because we don't have jobs for the people who are here now.
Yeah. And frankly, after World War II, there was a similar problem, Marilyn. We had a very, very high unemployment rate when the soldiers first came back. And what they put into place was the GI Bill. And so when my dad came back from Japan, for example, right after the war ended, he was able to go to college. And so he wasn't in the labor market, but he was able to get enough money to, you know, he had a stipend to pay for books and for a place to live and for food. And he went to school. And, you know, that's one of the ways that that can be dealt with when you have, you know, one of these huge dislocations. And I think that by providing, and frankly, I think that we should extend it beyond just the soldiers. We should simply say, you know, one of the best investments a country can make is in the education of their young people. And most of the countries of Europe, you can go to college for free. And many of the countries in Southeast Asia that are the most competitive, you can go to college for free. And they turn out a lot of engineers, and they turn out a lot of doctors, and they turn out a lot of, you know, very competent people who can provide a lot of services. And we end up importing them into the United States. How bizarre and how wrong is that? So excellent point, Marilyn. Thank you for making it. And let's take it even a step farther. There are so many opportunities. You know, let's not let this crisis go to waste. There are so many opportunities to make our system, to make this country work better, to make it more progressive, and really fill this out. In fact, we're going to be talking a little later on with Mike Lux in the next hour of the program about how, you know, how many of the founders, Thomas Paine in particular, saw this, you know, argued for this. Mike in Washington. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hello. Tom?
You are on the air, sir.
Yes, sir. I'm a long time, first time, and I'm Red O'Rick on your chat room, and on the same program that you talk about the horrible cost of the Iraq War, then you say that Tom Daschle is a decent guy. Tom Daschle did a lot to help George Bush get us into Iraq. He had an opportunity to put some pressure on, and he didn't.
Yeah. The same could be true of said of Hillary Clinton. The same could be said of many people.
Not too many. I mean, he was in a position of power.
He was the leader. Yeah,
he was.
I understand.
He broke
And Mike, I'm not strongly disagreeing with you.
Yeah.
My point is that the time to form the circular firing squad is not today.
Yeah. I just quickly, I watched his speech in the lead up to the war, and I was really tickled to death at all of the things that he was pointing out were reasons not to go to war. He talked for 10 or 15 minutes on why we shouldn't go to war, and then he said, but we will.
Tom Daschle?
And it broke my heart.
Yeah. It's a tough one. And you know, being a politician, well, it's one of the reasons that I'm a talk show host and not a politician. I mean, it takes a certain kind of constitution. And many of these politicians, frankly, both parties, I have a lot of respect for. Some of them, you know, are just egomaniacal hacks. But I don't think that Tom Daschle falls into that category. I think at the core, he's a decent guy. I just don't think that he's the best person for this job. That's all. I don't want to go on a Jeremiah and Mike, thanks for the call, against Tom Daschle and pull out, you know, in any political career. You can find things where people have done wrong, where they've gone in directions that you could argue that they shouldn't have. Richard in Eureka, California. Hey, Richard, got a break coming up here pretty quick. What's up?
Sure, but while I'm on the air with you, can you do one thing for me? I can't figure out why. Here's a fast way to put money into the economy. Force all banks and all lending institutions that they cannot have a higher interest rate than 15%. That would put money directly into pocket, disposable income.
Bernie Sanders has proposed that, bringing back usury laws, making a legal cap on insurance. And the other thing, and my brother Stan's suggestion, is make it illegal for the credit rating agencies to use a foreclosure against people, to count that as part of their credit ratings. And, there's a couple of relatively simple and straightforward things that could, and frankly, in my opinion, should be done. 866-303-2270, our telephone number, TomHartmann.com. For our free live chat room, airamerica.com, for a free live video. We'll be right back.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
What would Hartman do? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
She's loud, she's proud, and she definitely draws a crowd.
We cannot let the American porn industry go down.
Randy Rhodes.
So why is the porn industry asking for a bailout? I know that I've given the porn industry at least $5 billion myself, so there's no need for the bailout, Larry.
The Randy Rhodes Show.
If you cannot make money by producing pornography in this country,
3 to 6,
you are pretty much freaking hopeless.
On AM 620 KPOJ
and 620KPOJ.com.
A child's bedtime should also be a time to feel safe, warm, and protected. But for 8,000 Oregon foster children, separated from family and friends, nights can feel long and lonely. To help make those nights a little cozier, Sleep Country USA is collecting pajamas for foster kids big and small. But they can't do it without you. Bring your gift of new pajamas, packaged socks, and underclothes to any Sleep Country, and they'll be matched with a foster child in need. Help make an Oregon foster child's nights a little cozier with a gift of new pajamas, new socks, and underclothes, and you'll sleep better too. Sleep Country knows not everyone can be a foster parent, but anyone can help a foster child.
Help a foster child today by bringing your gift of new pajamas, socks, or underclothes to Sleep Country. Call 1-888-88-SLEEP to find the Sleep Country store nearest you.
Hey, Carl Wolfson here. Thanks to KPOJ listeners, last month, Eyes on Broadway collected dozens of pairs of eyeglasses that will be distributed in March when Dr. Tom Barreto travels to Peru to perform eye exams. If it's been more than a year since you've had your eyes checked, call Eyes on Broadway today at 503-284-2300 to schedule an appointment. Eyes on Broadway is a proud supporter of Progressive Radio, which is just one reason why I've been a loyal patient for 8 years. Call 284-2300 or visit eyesonbroadway.com.
Hey, Tom Hartman here to talk to you about Hawthorne Fish House's new $5.95 cash lunch menu. Choose from six delicious combos like fried cod or chicken strips with fries and coleslaw, or warm up with a bowl of chowder and a salad. Combos also include your choice of soda, lemonade, tea, coffee, or juice, all for just $5.95. What are you waiting for? Offer valid weekdays between 11 to 3 only at Hawthorne Fish House when paying with cash. And be sure to check out their gluten-free menu available at both Hawthorne Fish House Southeast and Corbett Fish House Southwest.
Join the country's top scholars and authors for Oregon's most prestigious lecture series, the Oregon Historical Society's Mark O. Hatfield Distinguished Historians Forum. The 2009 Sesquicentennial Series begins February 18th with Doris Kearns Goodwin lecturing on Abraham Lincoln. Ms. Goodwin is a world-renowned historian, commentator, and author of several New York Times bestsellers, including Team of Rivals, The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln. Learn more about Doris Kearns Goodwin and the rest of the speakers at OHS.org. Get your tickets today.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Didn't I hear this song before? Earlier in the day? Oh, that's right, it's Groundhog Day! And yeah, for those of you who didn't know, Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow 6 more weeks away. Here's a little known fact you probably didn't know about this. This is the apparently the midpoint between the winter solstice and the spring equinox, or is it the winter equinox and the spring solstice, whatever it is. And therefore, this is actually an old pagan holiday that we're celebrating as Groundhog Day. Ellen Ratter with us with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com on the line. Hey, Ellen, happy Groundhog Day.
Happy Groundhog Day to you, and the groundhogs will be in the Senate today taking up the $888 billion economic stimulus package. There are going to be a lot of opportunities for the Republicans to add various changes, suggest changes, amend things, et cetera. What they're trying to do is to skip morning business all this week so that they can go right to this. And as I said, Chuck Schumer of New York said that the Republican amendments will come to the floor and they will be debated.
Which is quite a change from back when the Republicans ran the Senate and they didn't even let the Democratic amendments come to the floor.
That's very true. Now, it's interesting. Your friends and mine at the Center for American Progress have done an analysis of what the Republicans want to spend money on, and they're apparently claiming, it seems a little high for my taste, but hey, I'm not an economist, that this the Republicans' plan, which mainly deals with cutting the corporate tax rate, the alternative minimum tax cut, all of those kinds of things would cost us $3.1 trillion. Of course, they always say if you cut taxes, it grows the economy, et cetera, but you got to have an economy to grow. So the president also did a two-part with Matt Lauer. Yesterday's aired before the game, and then today's aired this morning on NBC's Today Show. And he said that he will be a one-termer if the economy isn't righted in 3 years, which is no big surprise. We know that. He also said that
maybe not, Ellen. You know, the economy didn't get its act together in 36, and Franklin Roosevelt, although actually it was moving strongly and rapidly in the right direction in 36, but Franklin Roosevelt easily won that election.
Right. Well, it's not over till it's over, but let's hope the economy gets better by then. He also said that they're not going to spend $4 trillion on bank bailouts. Now, again, this was taped yesterday, but apparently the bank bailout situation is very, very serious because apparently the bad bank debts could total $4 trillion with a T. And Obama said today, no, we're not going to be spending the $4 trillion worth of taxpayer money. However, they're thinking of doing something, and the president said that he will not announce it until next week. But they're thinking of something as sort of a bad bank fund. They would sort of form a bad bank and then deal with banks, you know, individually as they sort of come on.
Right.
So that's sort of an interesting way of dealing with it. Also, you know how I love to give you little figures for usually start out with them. Department of Commerce this morning said that personal consumption fell 1% in December. And, of course, we know that that is usually a good spending month because of Christmas. And they had expected some kind of drop, but not that kind of drop. Personal income fell by 0.2%. And then construction spending was down much more than expected in December. It fell 1.4% right in December for construction.
Do you happen to know, Ellen, when they say personal income went down, what was it, 0.1%, 0.2%
Yeah.
Yeah. When they say that personal income went down, does that mean that the aggregate amount of wages, in other words, unemployment drove that down?
I don't know whether that includes unemployment or not.
Okay.
That's what I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
That's a good question. We should ask. Well, I'm going to have one of our little, we'll put one of our interns on that one.
Good. Thank you.
I'll give them a little task to do. They are also concerned that the largest U.S. banks, this is actually Time Magazine found this out, were worth $418 billion less than before the bailout, even though $165 billion was put into the banks from the bailout.
Wait a second. Say that again?
We put in $165 billion into these eight largest government banks, right?
Right.
Or not, we didn't, not all eight of them, but the
right.
eight largest. We put in $165 as part of that TARP money.
Right.
Well, now, as of today, they're worth $418 billion less. And if you recall, the Bush administration said, we're taking paper back, and this money is going to be worth something to American taxpayers.
Oh, so the stock that we got is worth less than the money that we put in. This just increasingly is looking to me like the bank heist of the century, no pun intended, that we just have been ripped off.
Yeah, this is a bank robbery.
Yeah, yeah, and it's the robbery of America. Amazing.
For sure. And also, the president said he stands behind Tom Daschle. Tom Daschle did send a letter apologizing to other senators. And the president also said that there will be limited U.S. objectives in Afghanistan. He said, my favorite quote is, he said, we're not going to be able to rebuild Afghanistan into a Jeffersonian democracy.
Hmm. Well, see, that's the problem. I mean, that's the whole problem with thinking that we could even have a democracy in Iraq, is that the necessary precondition for a democracy is a functioning middle class, a strong and healthy middle class. And no country in the history of the world without a functioning middle class has had a successful democracy. Their democracies always turn to strongmen. People always say, okay, who is going to make sure that I'm getting bread, that I've got food, that I have social security, that my electricity is working, you know, and those things, I mean, this is Maslow's hierarchy of human needs. Those things come before the more ethereal and intellectual needs, like living in a democratic society and having freedom of speech. And Iraq doesn't have a strong.
You only have electricity 4 hours a day, and it's 130 degrees outside. I don't think you care a lot about Jefferson and democracy.
That's right. That's my point. And that's the thing that these neocons absolutely fail to get. They don't understand it because it requires sort of an FDR worldview to understand it. So, Ellen, thanks for dropping by today.
Thank you.
Always great talking with you. Great having you on. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Coming up in the next hour, Mike Lux is going to drop by. He's the founder of Progressive Strategies. He's going to tell us about the history of the progressive movement. It's going to be fascinating.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the third hour of our show. Tom Hartman here with you. Mike Lux on the line with us. He's the founder of Progressive Strategies, the co-founder of OpenLeft.org, and advisor to President Obama's transition team. ProgressiveStrategies.net is the Progressive Strategies website. But perhaps most importantly, he has a new book out, which is fascinating. It's called The Progressive Revolution, How the Best in America Came to Be. Michael Lux, L-U-X. Michael Lux, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be back on.
Great to have you with us. In fact, didn't we meet when I was in Washington, D.C. for the inaugural? You dropped by?
Yeah, absolutely. I was wandering around Radio Row one of those days, and we sat and chatted for a little bit. It was good to meet you that day.
I recall. I love your book. The opening chapter, you talk about how really, to a large extent, Thomas Jefferson and Thomas Paine, these two idealists who were very, very enamored of the ideas of the liberal Enlightenment, really created the foundational ideas for the United States, and how the United States was founded as a liberal small-d democracy, unlike pretty much anything that had preceded it.
Yeah, it's really true, Tom, and people really don't know that story very well. When Tom Paine wrote Common Sense and published it back in January 1776, people talk about things going viral these days, but without any benefit, of course, of the internet or any modern communications method, the book sold the equivalent of more than 10 million copies in a couple of months. Which is astounding given that half of the American public was illiterate at the time. But people were reading it to each other in bars and restaurants all over the country. And what Paine was arguing was that we ought to create a whole new kind of government, a government that really is about the people rather than about the elites. And that idea just caught fire before mm-hmm. Before Tom Paine came along, people were kind of arguing at the edges about whether or not we should break from Great Britain or not, and if we did, who should be the king, That was
right.
The kind of argument.
Or a king-like figure, yeah.
Yeah, and then Jefferson, who was very much a collaborator with Paine and an ally of his, Jefferson managed to convince the Constitutional Congress to put those words at the beginning of the Declaration of Independence about all men being created equal, and that really started America down a path of being a government of, by, and for the people. It really was a profound change that no other country had ever tried that experiment before.
When I talk about that time, that era on this program, and Thomas Paine is one of my absolute heroes and favorites of the Revolutionary era, he and Thomas Jefferson, and Harvey Kay's book, Thomas Paine and the Promise of America.
Yeah, brilliant book, yeah.
Well, it's if anybody really wants to understand the founding of this country, they need to read Harvey Kay's book. But I'd say you've done a very, very good job also, and I would put your book right next to Harvey's. Yours comes all the way to the current day, of course. But that the conservative side of it was best represented by Sir Edmund Burke, who famously said words to the effect of, "It does me no harm if a man is allowed to engage in a profession as servile as that of hairdresser or tallow maker, candle maker, but it does society considerable violence if such a man is allowed to participate in governance," in other words, to vote or to run for public office. And that was the conservative position at that time, and there were conservatives in the United States, John Adams among them, after the Revolution, he became more conservative. Before the Revolution, he was an opponent of Burke's, but once he became president, he thought he was king. But there were a number of people in the United States who really held to that conservative worldview, and that battle that was going on then is going on to this day. And you quote in your book, for example, from The Conservative Mind, Russell Kirk's book, which I speak of often on this program, the book that ignited the modern revolution, the conservative revolution, or conservative era, shall we say. You know, Russell Kirk, his first chapter was devoted to Sir Edmund Burke.
That's right. No, he loved Edmund Burke, and Edmund Burke talked frequently about how tradition is far more important than any sense of justice, that he opposed change on its face because he said tradition trumped everything, and adherence to monarchs, adherence to the powers that be. Edmund Burke was a complete opponent of the revolutionary ideal espoused by people like Paine and Jefferson, and like Adams, unfortunately, in his later years, and like Alexander Hamilton, hated the idea of true democracy, hated the idea that regular people might be allowed to vote. And their quotes from the time are really quite striking.
Yeah, well, you know, his Hamilton's first address to the Constitutional Convention was in favor of the presidency being a lifetime appointment.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He was so ridiculed for that he left the convention in shame or anger and didn't come back for a number of months. Now, to his honor, or whatever the word is, you know, on the flip side of that is that Alexander Hamilton did come back and was, in fact, the only member of the New York delegation that signed the Constitution and then co-authored the Federalist Papers with James Madison to sell them. So he's sort of an anti-hero and a hero at the same time. But to bring it up to the modern day or to the midday, the 19th century, we really slid from the early 1820s, from the end of the first progressive era, right straight through. I mean, you could argue that there was a little mini progressive era with the election of Lincoln, but basically from the 1820s until Teddy Roosevelt, we were in the grip of the conservatives. And we had the robber baron era toward the end of that, and we had, you know, slavery and all this thing. And the conservatives were Democrats as well as Republicans, or Democrats as well as Whigs and whatnot. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, you're absolutely right. And there was a period in the 1860s where a lot of great things happened, in part because the South, all the conservatives in the South seceded. And so it allowed Lincoln and the radical Republicans to make some really important sweeping changes, obviously eliminating slavery being the most important. But also, you know, the Homestead Act, giving away free land to poor people, the land-grant university system, the constitutional amendments that were passed in that era that became the basis for all of the sort of current progressive changes that the Supreme Court has recognized.
Right. But that was all during that
education. It was all in that very, very short period of about 10 years in the 1860s. And other than that, that the 1800s was mostly dominated by very, very conservative forces. And in the last part of that century, what we call now the Gilded Age, the conservatives completely took over. And in fact, they called themselves social Darwinists.
Yeah.
And they believed that poor people ought to just be allowed to die, that would be good for humanity, because poor people must be bad just because they were poor. They couldn't figure out how to get rich, so screw them.
They were genetically inferior. And in fact, you know, Charles Darwin's cousin, Galton, was it, was the economist who was promoting those ideas in Europe. And that led directly to the eugenics movement in the 1920s in the United States, which Hitler emulated. But we're digressing from the thread of your book, I think, a little bit. Then we came back into a progressive era. The progressive movement in the 1880s and 1890s, the progressives started getting organized. It started with – didn't it start with the Grange movement, the farmers?
Yeah, it started with the farmers and the populists and the Grange movement, and then it worked its way into the cities with the progressive movement, with muckrakers like Upton Sinclair and Ida Turball. And then, you know, folks like Teddy Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson took a lot of those progressive era reforms, turned them into law, and really made a dramatic difference in terms of breaking up the big trusts and giving women the right to vote, starting the national park system. So the century got off to a good start. And unfortunately, after that, the conservatives took over again in the 20s. Which, of course, led directly to the Great Depression.
Right. Yeah, the Republican Great Depression. Because it was the consequence of, you know, Harding and Coolidge and Hoover, those three Republican presidents, dropping tax rates from 80% down to 25%, deregulating the markets, deregulating the banks, allowing for, you know, huge margin purchases of stock. And it created a huge bubble and then a crash, just like happened in the last 28 years.
Yeah, they did exactly what George W. Bush did, and it created, you know, the exact same formula.
Yeah, well, and it wasn't just George W. Bush. It was Reagan and Bush one and Clinton to some extent and Bush two on steroids. Michael Lux, Michael, I want to get you back because we only got half the history done, and I want to get to you know. But
there's a lot of good lessons for the current day in that history.
There are, and we need to talk about them. We'll get you back in the next week or two and continue the conversation. Michael Lux's new book, The Progressive Revolution. Thank you, Michael.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoying Republicans by defending the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
And now, a word from your dog about PetFoodDirect.com. He says you waste a lot of time and money schlepping. Yes, he said schlepping, to buy him food at the pet store. He says you could buy that same food from PetFoodDirect.com and save 20%. Not to mention the cost of gas, time, and schlepping home those big heavy bags from some store. You'll find 137 brands of pet food, guaranteed to save you time and money. PetFoodDirect.com has filled over 2 million orders in the past 10 years. That's 70 in dog years.
Visit PetFoodDirect.com and choose from 137 brands of pet food delivered right to your door. And today, save 20% on your order. Enter coupon code CAT at checkout. PetFoodDirect.com. Coupon code CAT.
He's an outsider.
This is the demise of a civilization.
With an insider's perspective.
Demise of civilization? What are we talking about here?
Ron Reagan, evenings 6 to 8.
Well, no wonder Bernie Marcos is so upset. Affording people the chance to unionize so that they could get better wages and benefits would be the death of America.
Ron Reagan, right after Randy Rhodes.
You've got to wonder about these titans of capitalism. You got to wonder what's going on in their head.
AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
If you're eligible for Medicare or about to turn 65, Sterling Health Plans might be your answer for Medicare coverage. Listen to what one of our enrollees, Artie Johnson, has to say about his Medicare plan with Sterling.
I just can't say enough good things about Sterling people. They're quality people and they're caring people. They give me the answers I need and they solve my problems for me, and I appreciate their help. They're the kind of people that I want to do business with. And they're the kind of people that I intend to keep on doing business with.
To learn more about our Medicare plan options, including Medicare prescription drug plans, call 1-800-489-8506 today. And when you call, don't be surprised when a real person answers the phone. That's just how we do things here. Underwritten by the Sterling Life Insurance Company. Real people, wise choices.
Have you ever found that one size doesn't fit all? Shoes, clothes, or even sporting gear, the best stuff is fitted to you. That's true for furniture, too. Ridiculously comfortable Lazy Boy reclining chairs come in over 70 unique sizes and styles. Whatever your size, tall, short, long-legged, petite, there's a chair for you. Each one features patented designs that provide full body and lumbar support, unlike cheap recliners that pretty much give you a feet up, feet down, and that big gap between the seat and the back that's covered by a piece of cloth, that's not going to support you. What you really need is stylish and well-constructed Lazy Boy furniture. Each piece comes with a lifetime warranty, and with more than 1,200 fabrics and leathers to choose from, you can customize your choice so your perfectly fitted chair will perfectly complement your home. Shop our six area stores or online at LazyBoyPortland.com. You're home now. Put your feet up.
Why get your dinner from the fast food window when you can make a real meal at home? With Stouffer's, you can make a delicious meal with real ingredients and no preservatives for as little as $2 a serving. Now that's a value menu.
Beaverton Lodge Retirement Residence offers independent senior living in the heart of Beaverton within walking distance of the Beaverton Library and the Stuhr Senior Center. Visit and discover the affordable luxury of Beaverton Lodge with its spacious apartments, large decks, and in-room storage, all in a woodland setting. Visit their website at beavertonlodge.com.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, brought to you by you, our listeners, supporting our show, your radio stations, and our advertisers. Let them know that you're listening. 21 minutes past the hour, Doug Cunningham on the line with us. He's the producer for the Workers Independent News. WIN, laborradio.org is their website. And Doug, hey, welcome to the welcome back to the show. You used to be a regular years ago.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Good to be with you. Good to be back.
Great to hear your voice again, Doug. Your great radio voice. Tell us, what's the state of organized labor? What's going on? What's the news in the world of labor right now?
Well, this is a very exciting time, of course, because there's a lot of promise now for organized labor. In 2008, organized labor increased its membership for the first time in a long time, 428,000 workers. That's a net gain for organized labor that reverses years and years of decline. So there's a lot of hope. There's a lot of optimism that there may be a labor renaissance in the offing with the Obama administration, but nothing is guaranteed. So organized labor is about pushing its agenda now and trying to make sure that these changes that the voters voted for actually really will happen in the Obama administration.
Yeah, and how do we go about doing that? And particularly, you know, given that only about 8% of the private workforce in the United States is unionized, how can people who are not members of unions help make sure that this kind of change comes about?
Well, there are all sorts of ways for people to get active and get involved politically, of course. That's one avenue. Another thing that they can do is join the AFL-CIO's community affiliate, Working America, which is specifically designed for workers who are not members of unions. And that Working America organization can be found on the Internet, on the web. People can go there and figure out how to join. It's pretty easy to do, and it's a politically active organization that attempts to do things and to create changes that are on behalf of all workers, not just union workers. So that's a clear avenue. Of course, we're in very, very harsh economic times, to say the least, and we have grave challenges ahead of us, but we also have extreme promise and hope that we can really see sweeping changes. We don't need just to bring this economy back in terms of making it more efficient and more profitable, but we need to have sweeping economic changes that can rebuild the middle class in America, rebuild the American dream, and that's what organized labor is attempting to do on a variety of fronts right now.
We're talking with Doug Cunningham of Workers Independent News, WIN, laborradio.org is their website. Doug, apropos of that, of this economy, you know, being in the tank, 28 years of Reaganomics and war on organized labor, on working people, frankly, you know, and gifts to the ultra-rich and to corporations. The apparent good news coming out of New York City was that the gap in wages between men and women seemed to have declined. Turns out, though, that if I'm reading your website right, that it's not because women are getting paid more, it's because men are getting paid less.
Yeah,
I have it right?
Right. That's the unfortunate flip side of that. Union women, by the way, do far better than women workers who are not in unions. And, of course, President Obama's first bill was the Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, which makes it easier for women who are being discriminated against in terms of wages to take legal action against the employers to redress that grievance. So that's a positive development there. But, you know, as you mentioned, Tom, in your book, Screwed, I mean, we need a whole variety of initiatives to rebuild the American middle class and to make sure that things like a living wage for all workers is a reality, that retirement security is a reality, national universal health care has to be a reality. We have to have a strong social safety net. And I think above all, right now, we need to not listen to the failed policies that have gotten us in this predicament. And those trickle-down economic theories, for example, the anti-labor, anti-union approach of the George Bush administration, those things need to be put into the trash can of history. And we don't need to listen to those folks right now. We need to press ahead with real sweeping change.
Yeah, it's just astounding to me that these Republicans show up on the national talk shows and lay out their talking points, or even on the news shows, you know, CNN and whatnot, and lay out their Republican talking points, and the host doesn't go, hey, wait a minute, you've been saying that for 28. Every time we do what you're saying, everybody gets screwed. Come on, are you really trying to say this again? You know, I'm just astounded that nobody has, just fallen apart laughing at these guys.
I've been amazed that some reporter somewhere hasn't just flat out said to them, listen, you know, your policies have created a catastrophic financial meltdown, and now the average working family makes $2,000 a year roughly less than they did at the beginning of the George W. Bush administration. So why in the world should we listen to anything that you guys have to say about the way forward? We don't need to listen. Obviously, the Obama Recovery Act in the House was passed without a single Republican vote. And, you know, I'm not about being mean-spirited here, but the voters voted for a sweeping change. It was a huge mandate for change, real change. And if the Republicans are going to stand in the way and try to obstruct or try to mislead us into the same old policies that have failed already, we don't need to buy that program. We don't need to buy into it. And reporters ought to be more aggressive about it. Workers Independent News tries to focus on workers and their unions and the issues that affect them and try to tell the truth about how those policies are affecting working people and what needs to be done to improve it. To be pro-worker is to be pro-American.
Yeah, it's also astounding to me, Doug Cunningham, how rarely we see labor news of any sort in newspapers when just 30 years ago, every newspaper in America, or most of them, had a labor page or a labor section.
Yeah, and even now, with the coverage of the financial crisis by the corporate media, workers' voices, union voices are muzzled and muted in the corporate media. Workers Independent News tries to change that so that people can be properly informed, fully informed, so that they can make informed, intelligent choices about public policies that affect working people.
And you're doing a great job over at laborradio.org. Doug Cunningham, producer at Workers Independent News. Doug, thanks for dropping by.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Good talking with you. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Wasn't Jesus a community organizer? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
I always thought this was a song about depression, I guess, by the Stones, but it's really where the Republicans are hanging out right now. I tell you what. Anyhow, time for our
farmer had raised chickens since he was 24.
Ghost chicken alert.
For the colonel for 30 years or more, killing all the chickens and sending them to fried. Now it's payback time for ghost chickens in the sky.
So here's the story. In a gut-busting display of championship eating, a man nicknamed Super Squib has won Philadelphia's Wing Bowl by downing 203 chicken wings in 20 minutes. For his efforts, 23-year-old John Squib of Berlin, New Jersey, gets a car, a $7,500 diamond ring, a crown of miniature chickens, a case of indigestion, and maybe when he dies and goes up to the sky, he discovers that God is actually a chicken.
Their beaks were black and shiny, their eyes were burning red. Had no meat or feathers, these chickens were dead. They picked the farmer up, and he died by the claw. They cooked him extra crispy, and ate him with coleslaw.
Look out for those ghost chickens in the sky, as Sean Morey reminds us. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Carol in Phoenix. Hey, Carol, welcome to the show.
Back to medical records again.
Okay.
You know, before the computer revolution, no one talked about ID theft. It wasn't even a concept we thought of. And companies.
Well, actually, if I may correct you, Carol, you'll find stories written. Steinbeck, actually, as I recall, wrote a short story. Maybe it was maybe it was Hemingway. It's been, you know, I read it as a kid about identity theft, about somebody stealing somebody's driver's license. People had phony IDs and things. I mean, that this has been around for a long time, although you're right. It is far more pervasive now. And well, now you've got, you know, Russians.
Yeah, like we had
it.
Watergate, too. You know, and they had to bust in the office and all that to get the data. They don't have to work so hard to get it now.
Right.
You know, and back before computerization, companies weren't using little bits of info about us to increase our property insurance premiums, our interest rates on our credit cards and loans. Employers weren't using choice point data to keep us from getting employment.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, after we acknowledge, you know, how computers have just made our whole innards, you know, a window for everyone else to look into, why should we advertise sensitive medical records on the Internet? Because they're in computer systems nationwide.
You mean not advertise them, you mean store them.
Where we are advertising them. Isn't that what we do? When we put it in there in such an such an available format for crooks, isn't that what we're doing? Aren't we advertising them?
And, I share your concerns, Carol. Here's the thing that really concerns me, and that is that with Twitter and, you know, there are applications for the iPhone now where you can track all your friends based on the GPS on their phones, and people and kids in droves are signing up for these kind of things. People are daily saying, you know, here's in their Facebook entries, well, here's where I went today, here's what I'm doing now. It's almost like the concept of privacy is something that for people under 30 is almost unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what to do about this. I think that this is an issue. You know, the concept of privacy is changing now in the United States dramatically as a consequence of this computer revolution and as a consequence of social networking. And, you know, there's an upside to that in that people can stay connected to others, and that's, we know, a healthy thing psychologically. There's a downside in that it opens up the doors for predators, and both personal predators. You know, we hear stories of, you know, 12-year-old girls being lured across state lines and whatnot. And corporate predators, the insurance companies, for example, or the mortgage companies using your credit information or your health information to jack up the rates and make more money on you. And frankly, I think that we need to have a national discussion about this, and I find it fascinating. I would love to find an anthropologist, a cultural anthropologist, or you know, somebody who's really, really good with anthropology and psychology to discuss this phenomenon. I don't know of any good books on the topic. I don't know of anybody who's doing any good science on the project, any good analysis on it. But the fact of the matter is that as people who are over 40, who remember the day when you could pay for a hotel room with cash and you could pay for an airplane ticket with cash and nobody raise their eyes. And today, if you try to rent a hotel room with cash, they won't rent it to you. I mean, there are parts of this country where you have to show your driver's license just to check in, where you have to show ID. It used to be you could say, I'm John Smith, here's my $20 bill, right? And it wasn't always for the best of purposes, but what the heck? It used to be, I remember reading John D. McDonald's novels. I used to love the Travis McGee novels that John D. McDonald wrote. And McGee would always pay cash. He'd travel around. Now, these were written in the 60s and 70s. And he'd travel around the United States. He'd get on planes, and they always, always pay cash because he hated the idea of anybody being able to track who he was, where he was going, what he was doing. And what he was doing was, by and large, legitimate. So it's like we're trading off security for freedom, for privacy. And this concept that privacy and freedom are similar is a concept that was trashed by the Bush administration. They said, if you want freedom, give up your privacy. Let us wiretap your phone. Let us read your emails. That was the pitch of the Bush administration. And increasingly, I see younger people buying into this. And I see the older people who remember a time when you could be anonymous in the United States, you could have privacy in the United States, being A, dying off, and being marginalized as if they were Ted Kaczynski. And I frankly don't know what to do about it. And I think it's a fascinating topic. And as we go on through the next years, you know, feel free, if you have thoughts on this, to call into the show. Pretty much, you know, any topic we're talking about, I think that this, feel free to bust in with this, because this is a big deal, and I honestly don't have an easy answer for it. I don't have a neat little soundbite or a cliche or anything simple. I see a generational shift in the understanding of what the Fourth Amendment means and what privacy means And all, you know, and all these things. And I think it's going to have enormous consequences. It's going to have consequences that are going to lead to more corporate control over our lives. It's going to have consequences that are going to lead to more government control over our lives in ways that even those of us who are willing to trust the government to pay our medical bills don't want. And that may well end up modifying the way that we even relate to each other. I just find the whole thing fascinating. And so anyway, Edward in California. Edward, thanks for holding so long. What's up?
Hello, Tom. How you doing?
Good.
First time caller. I was curious. I have an insight to this whole bailout situation and the bill that's up on Capitol Hill that you're debating. How come they haven't put in that bill some of the old usury laws for our credit cards? You want to stimulate the economy. Why don't you let people pay more principal on our credit cards so that we can spend more money?
Right.
You know?
There's two possible reasons, Edward. One is that Paul Volcker is in the background advising Obama, and Volcker is the guy who jacked interest rates up to 20%, you know, during the Carter administration, and wrung inflation out of the economy, and that they want to keep that as an option. That's one possibility. That's the benign possibility. The other possibility, which I think is frankly the probability, is that the credit card and banking industry passes out hundreds of millions, perhaps billions, maybe even tens of billions of dollars to legislators every year in the form of lobbying and trips and gifts and campaign contributions, and they're beholden to them. And we certainly saw this when the bankruptcy law was being debated. And
it's a two-party trap.
Yeah, and so I agree with you. I mean, this is one of Bernie Sanders' big things, and he's not a Democrat or a Republican, so it's perhaps a little easier for him to talk about it. Yeah, and Bernie says, you know, bring back the usury laws. Make it a crime. You can go to jail for charging more than 10 or 12 or 14% interest. And, you know, if they can't run a credit card company at 12% interest or at 10% interest, they have no business being in the business. If the costs are that high, then let's either A, figure out structural changes that we can make, make credit card theft, for example, a different kind of crime, a much heavier crime. Let's figure out structural changes we can make so that they can be profitable, or let them figure out how to operate in an environment where those are the rules of the game. It's very simple. Robert in Phoenix. Hey, Robert, what's up?
Hi, Don. Let me get you off speaker for a second. Hold on.
Sure. Thank you.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Great. What's up?
I have a history question for you. I've listened to – I'm a regular listener to your program, and I've heard you talk about in the past about there was Republican opposition to entering World War II.
Yes.
And, I heard you mentioned senators on the floor arguing against it because the economy was just getting back on track, and we shouldn't mess that up by getting into the war. And
at length.
I was just wondering where I can find some of that information for myself.
There is Rex Stout, who is arguably one of the most famous authors of the 20th century. More than 75 million copies of his Nero Wolfe novels are in print, still in print, actually. They're still reprinting them. He died about a decade and a half ago. Rex Stout was the head of a group during World War II of writers who were helping tell the American story, American propaganda, pro-American propaganda. He was a Democrat. And he wrote a book called The Illustrious Dunderheads, which he published in 1946. And you can find – it's been out of print for 40 years, but you can still find used copies over at ABE Books or some of the other used book sites, abebooks.com. It's called The Illustrious Dunderheads by Rex Stout. And all it is, my dad gave this to me for my birthday about a decade ago. It's just a wonderful book. It is nothing more than a collection of floor speeches on the floor of the House and Senate, mostly by Republicans. There's a few Democrats in there, arguing that Hitler wasn't such a bad guy. We shouldn't go into this war. Let's keep the recovery on track. This is going to be a big failure. Roosevelt's just doing this because he wants to grab power. All this stuff about the Jews is just nonsense. All this kind of stuff. All of those speeches are right there. In fact, I've got a copy someplace all marked up. I've read from it on this show before. The Illustrious Dunderheads by Rex Stout.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Fighting mind-numbing incompetence. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Provider and licensing details are available.
If this is your paycheck and this is your debt, what are your options? File bankruptcy and tread water the next 7 years? Or make a call for CareOne Credit Counseling Services and start getting out of debt today. A Care One credit counseling agency can help you get immediate relief from stress caused by debt, and you'll have one lower monthly payment instead of the pile you have right now. Call a Care One agent today, and you can start saving hundreds of dollars in fees and interest payments. Care One agencies have helped over 4 million people get out of debt, and they can help you too. Call 800-498-2983, 800-498-2983, and find out how you can lower your monthly payments up to 57%. One 15-minute phone call can change your life. Call 800-498-2983, 800-498-2983.
You know, the ones, fives, tens, twenties, fifties, and hundreds, that money is backed by what is called the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I don't know about you, but I have no faith in this government. And as far as its credit rating, if the U.S. government were rated by one of these rating companies,
what would it be? Zero worth? It's Mike Malloy.
I mean, how do you rate a nation that's $12 trillion in debt?
Evening, 8 to 11. AM 620 KBOJ. 620KBOJ.com.
Al museo está al lado del parque. Al museo está al lado del parque. Al museo está al lado del parque. El museo está al lado.
When you realize you're actually speaking in another language, you won't be able to stop. Experience the joy for yourself with a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone. Call 1-800-509-9122. Developed around the way you naturally think and learn, Rosetta Stone guarantees that this proven program is the fastest, easiest way to learn a new language, the same way you learned your first language. And now you can get a free demo as our gift to you. With no translation, no boring drills, and no useless memorization, there's no way you won't enjoy learning a new language.
El museo está al lado del parque.
Try Rosetta Stone for free by calling 1-800-509-9122. 1-800-509-9122. For your free demo, call 1-800-509-9122.
Do you know why you get dark circles under your eyes? Because blood leaks out of your capillaries and pools under your skin. I'm not kidding. It's just like an ugly bruise. But now you can erase dark circles with a proven breakthrough called Hydralyze. Hydralyze diminishes dark circles and tightens puffiness and bags by repairing leaky capillaries, leaving you with younger, brighter eyes. See for yourself by calling for a free trial right now. Just call 1-800-993-1669.
My husband, he can't stop complimenting me. People tell me I look 10 years younger.
Even surgery cannot deliver these stunning results. Hydralyze is so powerful it even helps build new collagen in the skin, reducing crow's feet and wrinkles. Try Hydralyze risk-free and see for yourself.
Well, I used it and wow, the dark circles are gone. I don't look tired anymore. I feel great.
You deserve younger, brighter eyes. Call now for your free trial of Hydralyze and experience the transformation for yourself. For your free trial, call 1-800-993-1669. That's 1-800-993-1669.
Join the country's top scholars and authors for Oregon's most prestigious lecture series, the Oregon Historical Society's Mark O. Hatfield Distinguished Historians Forum. The 2009 Sesquicentennial Series begins February 18th with Doris Kearns Goodwin lecturing on Abraham Lincoln. Ms. Goodwin is a world-renowned historian, commentator, and author of several New York Times bestsellers, including Team of Rivals, The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln. Learn more about Doris Kearns Goodwin and the rest of the speakers at OHS.org. Get your tickets today.
Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
You know, in many societies, your status is measured by not what you have, but what you give. If only we could move in more of that direction here. Nancy Williamson is with us. Williams. Nancy Williams is with Sudan Sunrise. SudanSunrise.org is the website. She just came back from South Sudan, where I was in March. We did our show live from South Sudan, from a city near the border with Darfur. I was there with Joe Madison, Rusty Humphreys, Jack Rice, Ellen Ratner helped put the trip together, and with my son, Justin. Nancy Williams, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Tom. Thank you so much for having me. It's really an honor to be on the air with your listeners this morning.
Well, thank you for being here. Thanks for the great work that you're doing in South Sudan, with SudanSunrise.org. It's a great organization. When Justin and I were there, we met with Salva Kiir, the president of South Sudan, and there was much talk around, I don't want to put words in his mouth or even attribute anything to him, but there was a lot of talk about the possibility that in 2011, 2012, as elections were coming, that there could be war between the North. Now Bashir and his two right-hand men have been essentially indicted by the International Criminal Court as war criminals for their genocide in Darfur, and they're fighting that. But between them and South Sudan, oil has been found in the south. The oil money is going into the north. There's a lot of conflict. What is the state of politics in South Sudan right now?
Well, I'm definitely not an expert on the politics there. As you're well aware, it's very complicated. The talk that I heard really wasn't so much about the referendum and the election or the vote, pardon me, in 2011, so much as the elections this year, 2009.
Right.
They were worried about war, maybe not so much even between North and South, but maybe some of the tribes there in the South.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, Salva Kiir is the president of Southern Sudan. He's from the Dinka tribe. I think a lot of the other tribes are vying for power, control over the government.
Yeah.
That's what I was hearing mostly as far as their concern about a war.
Any sense of what percentage of the population of South Sudan is Dinka? Because it seems that most of the places that we visited were mostly ethnic Dinka.
They are, I believe, the largest tribe. I don't know anything about percentages. I do know that Juba is owned largely by the Baria.
Juba is the town in the south, which is the functional seat of government, and then we were also up in the north in Gok Machar and whatnot. So where were you, and tell us about the work that Sudan Sunrise is doing and that you're doing, SudanSunrise.org, Nancy Williams.
Okay. Well, we flew into Entebbe and went up to Kampala and met a great group from Uganda that I really hope we'll be working closely with in the future on a lot of school projects. Their company is called Technology for Tomorrow. They work with the compressed earth block, also the interlocking stabilized soil block, I believe is what they call it. And that's what we're using to build Manute Bol's school with in Torole. And so we got to see one of the compressed earth buildings there and flew up into Juba.
Mm-hmm.
We had some problems. It seemed like nothing really went as we planned it, but I really feel like everything went as it was supposed to go, as God had planned it. So we spent a lot of time in Juba trying to get the presses free and papers for a couple of the Ugandans. We never got to Gorion, which is the school that I really felt I was to go teach in.
Mm-hmm.
It's the school where Francis Bach was abducted when he was 7, taken as a prisoner for 10 years until he escaped. And he had just been back for the very first time in March, actually just before you and your son Justin, just after you and your son Justin were there.
Mm-hmm.
Francis went to his village for the very first time. That's where I feel like I was really being led to teach. We never did get to Gorion, but we made it to Torle, to Manute Bol's village. You might know Manute Bol. He's 7'7", former NBA basketball player, leading Black Shots. Yes.
Yeah.
So he lives in Kansas, but he visits Torle often, and when he's there, he lives right in a tukul. I don't know how he does it. I knocked my head on the tukul twice coming out, and he's so tall. But he lives right there, so he knows his people. They know him. We got to meet a lot of the chiefs. They had a beautiful celebration for us in Torle. They laid a little bull down. We jumped over it. It was this welcoming. They followed us and singing through the village.
Yeah.
We met with the chiefs.
What's Nancy? We're talking about Nancy Williams. SudanSunrise.org is the website. They're building schools and helping people become literate in Sudan, among other things. You can read about it on their website. Nancy, we just have a minute left. We encountered a lot of refugees coming out of Darfur into the south, and just a lot of upheaval in the south. How can America, how can the world best respond to the humanitarian crises in South Sudan?
Well, let me tell you quickly, since we don't have much time left, what Sudan Sunrise does, what we're doing there, and what's different from a lot of other humanitarian organizations. We're working really hard to promote peace and reconciliation, to let the Darfurians and the Southern Sudanese, actually all the Sudanese, really help themselves. So we have a peace and reconciliation video that we show. It's been so well received. Even Riek Machar, the vice president of Southern Sudan, had invited us to meet with him after seeing the movie. And I really feel that the schools that we're building will be open to teach the Darfurians alongside the Southern Sudanese.
That's great. Education, bringing people together. Nancy Williams, the website, SudanSunrise.org. You can check it out. Nancy, thanks for the great work you're doing and for being on the show.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Great talking with you. Coming up tomorrow, Dan Gaynor, VP of the Business and Media Institute. Conservatives are suddenly calling for the media to demand government accountability. Where have they been the last 8 years? Plus, Jack Canfield's going to drop by. His new book, Chicken Soup for the Soul, My Resolution. Plus, the best of the rest of the news. Don't forget, democracy begins with you, my friends. Get active. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.